Good morning. My name is Sunny Whedon. I'm very happy and honored to be here with all of you for the second year to give a presentation. It's very exciting to me. So when I asked my PowerPoint designer to make my presentation, when I got it back, here's this wonderful picture that I think shows a depressed person. It shows it really very perfectly, it seems to me. You can see the confusion and the despair. So I was thinking about how to describe what depression, major depression, is really like. And the artist, Vincent van Gogh, said, "One feels as if one were lying bound hand and foot at the bottom of a deep, dark well, utterly helpless." So if you think about that image, bound hand and foot at the bottom of a deep, dark well, utterly hopeless, I think it's the true feeling of people who have depression. In the United States, there's a famous author named William Styron, and he wrote a book about his own experience with depression, and the book is called Darkness Visible. And this is a thin little book, but I recommend it to you if you're interested in learning a personal perspective by a very fine writer about depression. And he said about his illness, "The pain is unrelenting, and what makes the condition intolerable is the foreknowledge that no remedy will come. Not in a day, not in an hour, not in a month, or in a minute. If there is mild relief, one knows that it is only temporary. More pain will follow. It is hopelessness, even more than pain, that crushes the soul." That's important, that hopelessness is the part that crushes the soul. So the decision-making of daily life involves, not as in normal affairs, shifting from one little annoying situation to another a little less annoying, or from one discomfort to relative comfort, or from boredom to activity, but from moving from one pain to another pain. One does not abandon even briefly one's bed of nails, but is attached to it wherever one goes. William Styron talks in his book about having been a very active man with a very powerful, successful career, and then being moved to a place where he would follow his wife in the grocery store because he was afraid to be away from her. He was afraid to be alone. He was afraid to make decisions. He couldn't decide what to buy at the grocery store. And that he too had utter despair about ever being well. I remember a woman who came to see me with severe depression. This was a woman who was a nurse. She took care of tiny babies in the baby nursery. She was a married woman with three children. And she said to me, "I know there's something wrong, Dr. Whedon, because I don't love my children anymore. And when a mother doesn't love her children anymore, something is terribly wrong." So depression is the most common form of disability in the world today. And its symptoms are so imperceptible from the outside that often it's extremely difficult to tell who is suffering and who is not. It appears at some time during their lifetime, about 10% of the world's population will suffer from depression. Now that is a huge statistic. It's thought that in the United States, about 7% of the population is depressed at any time. So that you can see the numbers are really enormous of people who are suffering from depression. So I thought before I talk about the causes of depression, which is actually my topic, I should talk to you a little bit about how in the United States we diagnose depression. How do I know? A person comes to my office. How do I know if they are depressed? How do I figure it out with them? They may not be able to tell me what's wrong. So we have a book called The Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, and the American Psychiatric Association publishes it. I didn't bring it because it's a big fat book. It's too heavy for my suitcase. But it describes all the different psychiatric illnesses, all the mental health issues that we know about, and what are the diagnostic criteria for each. So here are the diagnostic criteria for major depression. Although there are several types of depression, I'm only going to talk about major depression today. First of all, depressed mood or irritable mood. Most of the day, every day, for a period of at least 2 weeks. And it represents a change from previous functioning and it interferes with daily living. So I will tell you that I find oftentimes with men and with adolescents, with teenagers, the symptom is irritability. If I have a man in my office who's very angry all the time, and it's a change from how he usually is, and it's interfering in his work or in his marriage, then I start thinking about depression. More often than not, women will be not so irritable, but more tearful, more sad. All right? So, secondly, a reduced level of pressure or interest in most all activities. All of us have things that give us joy. Maybe it's our children, our pets, hobbies. Maybe we like to play sports. We have favorite programs on television. And all of a sudden, we don't care about any of it. We do it. We don't want to do it. It doesn't give us pleasure anymore. So it's a loss of pleasure in the things that would usually give us joy. Considerable loss or gain of weight, or increase or decrease in appetite. So now we're going to talk about extremes. If I start to gain a lot of weight, or if I start to lose weight, I have no appetite. That would be one symptom, possibly, of depression. Insomnia or hypersomnia. So I can't sleep, I can't fall asleep, I can't stay asleep, I can't get enough sleep that I need. Or the other extreme is I'm sleeping all the time and I just don't want to get up. So again, extremes. Behavior that is agitated or very slowed down. So at one end of the spectrum, I have people who are pacing all the time. They can't sit still. They can't stand still. They just want to be moving all the time and it's a change. Or they are either sitting or flopped in their bed and they just don't want to move. So again, extremes. All right, these symptoms are a cause of great distress because they're new and different. The person was fine before these symptoms began. So they're feeling fatigued or diminished energy. A lot of times people come to say, I'm so tired all the time. I don't want to do anything. Now, of course, I'm a psychologist. I'm not a medical doctor. So I would send my patient to their doctor, first of all, for a physical, to make sure there's nothing physically wrong with them before I make any diagnosis. Thoughts of worthlessness or extreme guilt. Oftentimes what happens with depression is the person begins to say to themselves and to others, I have no purpose. My life has no meaning. What good am I? I'm really worthless. I think maybe I would be better off dead. Maybe my family would be better off if I was dead. At least they could collect the life insurance money, and they don't really need me. Or extreme guilt. You know, all of us are human beings. We make mistakes. We hurt someone's feelings or whatever. And of course we feel guilt. We should feel guilt. But if it is extreme, more than what you would expect would be a symptom of depression. Frequent thoughts of death or suicide or an attempted suicide. So when I hear people say, I would be better off dead, my family would be better off if I was dead, I begin asking them, are you thinking about hurting yourself? And of course, if they say yes, I have to make a plan to keep them safe. So at the bottom it says, none of these symptoms are being caused by substance abuse, medication, or another medical condition. Now, if I go back to the little piece that was written by William Stryan, What he didn't say in his book, he refers to it, but he didn't really say that his doctor talked to him about it, is he was alcoholic. He was drinking a lot of alcohol. Alcohol is a depressant to the central nervous system, and all by itself, it will cause depression. So I need to ask, you know, do you drink alcohol? If you drink alcohol, how much alcohol do you drink? And if you are feeling depressed, you need to stop drinking alcohol or you're not going to get well. But I need to check to make sure that they're not abusing alcohol or other chemicals, that it's not medication of some sort that's causing their depression, or some other medical condition. So I'll talk more about that later. Can you all hear me well enough? Okay, good. Okay, so I was asked to talk about the main causes of depression, and there are a number of categories. I'm going to go through them now, and then I'll review them again. Abuse of any kind in a person's lifetime can be a cause of depression, especially for children when the brain is growing and developing. If they are being abused physically or sexually or verbally, it can be a cause of depression. So, of course, when I'm talking to a patient, I'm taking their history, I'm asking about abuse. Now, what I did not put in here, but is important, is also neglect. Children who are neglected, where nobody cares about them, they don't mistreat them, they just don't care about them, will oftentimes develop depression, either right then and there or later on in their life. And I will tell you that oftentimes with women in particular who come to my office with depression, they had an experience of abuse in their childhood, which they didn't think very much about until they had their own child. And then they notice, oh my goodness, when I was my child's age, I was being hit, or I was being sexually abused, or I was being told that I was worthless, and now I see my own child, and I don't understand how anybody could do that. Okay? So abuse of any kind can make us vulnerable to depression later in life. Certain medications, some drugs such as Accutane, the antiviral interferon alpha, and corticosteroids can increase the risk of depression. Accutane in the United States is typically used for severe skin conditions, and it can cause depression. Interferon is often used in treating cancer, in treating hepatitis C, and other situations, and it can definitely cause depression. So I will tell you, I watched my own brother, who had multiple myeloma, a type of cancer, become very depressed on interferon. It was very hard for him, and he was a lively, fun-loving guy who suddenly became depressed because of the interferon, because of medication. Conflict. Personal conflict with family or friends. You know, we all have a circle of friends or family around us. We depend on them for support, for love, for sociability. And if suddenly they become angry with us, or they reject us, perhaps it's a divorce, a marital divorce, you know, where suddenly we feel betrayed by the person we loved and trusted, it can be a cause of depression. So it's important to ask about a person's relationships. You know, I have a friend named Susan, and she chose as her life partner another woman, which in the United States is still not very acceptable to many people. And her family, all of her family, have rejected her and said, we never want to see you again. Very sad, very difficult for this very kind and loving woman, her very kind and loving partner, because of her choice. So when we feel that kind of rejection from people who we care about, who we depend on for love, for social life, very, very difficult situation. Death or loss. Sadness and grief are normal, but if they become prolonged, then it can go into depression. So all of us here in our lifetime are going to experience the death of a loved one, a spouse, a close friend, our parents, perhaps even a child. And it is normal to feel grief, to feel depressed for a period of time. It used to be the case when I was a little girl that if there was a significant loss, men would wear a black armband on their arm over their suit, and women would wear black for a whole year. So if you saw a person with a black armband or with a black outfit, you would know that they were in grief and that it was okay to not expect a lot of them because they were very sad. But if it continues on and on and on, and the grief does not relent, it can become depression. So I'm going to review a little bit more. Genetics can be a cause of depression. A family history of depression may increase the risk. And it's thought that depression is a complex trait. This is very important, meaning that there are probably different genes that each exert small effects rather than a single gene that contributes to gene risk. It is not as simple or straightforward as a purely genetic disease such as Huntington's chorea or cystic fibrosis. Huntington's chorea and cystic fibrosis have a distinct gene marker. So if you have that gene, you know there is very, very high probability that you're going to have that disease, that that's just the way it is for you. But we have not found one single gene that creates depression. And it's not fully understood yet, but it is thought that it's a complex pattern of genetic predisposition. Major events can cause depression. And even good events, such as starting a new job or graduating from school or getting married, can lead to depression. Now, that seems kind of a funny thing. I graduate from school, I should be happy. But what if school has been a favorite place for me? My friends are all there. I know my teachers. I'm comfortable there. And now I've graduated, and I have to face the big world, and I don't feel ready. And maybe I'm worried that I won't be able to get a job, or if I get a job, I won't measure up, something like that. So whenever we have a major life event, it means excitement, of course, but it also means loss. It's common for people who get married to say, oh no, maybe I made a mistake. Maybe this is the wrong person. I want to go home to my mother and father, you know. So those major life transitions that are happy ones can cause depression. So can moving, losing a job, getting divorced, or retiring. I think retiring is a very important one because in the United States, you know, the typical retirement age is around 65. Now, I'm 69 years old and I don't have intention of retiring anytime soon, but if we are retiring at 65 or close to that, and now people are living into their 80s, sometimes even 90, what am I going to do with those last 25 or 30 years of my life? And if I'm used to going to work every day, and I have all of you to associate with, and I see you, and I have work that feels meaningful to me, and all of a sudden they say goodbye, if I don't have something else planned that gives my life meaning, I can have depression. And it's very common for older people in the U.S. to develop depression, to begin drinking more alcohol, or taking a lot of prescription drugs, and really getting into trouble with depression. So it's important to realize that depression is never just a normal response to stressful events. We all get a little stressed when there are life changes or when, you know, we have an upset with a friend or a family member. That is normal. But I gave you the diagnostic criteria. And you have to remember that the person has sunk into depression for at least 2 weeks and has lost their joy in living. Okay, other personal problems. Social isolation due to other mental illness or being cast out of family or social groups can contribute to depression. So, of course, people who have mental illness or people who have handicaps of some kind oftentimes are extremely lonely. They have difficulty making friends. They have difficulty having regular jobs and may feel very socially isolated. I already talked about my friend Susan, whose family has rejected her, and that would be considered another kind of social personal problem. So it's important, you know, in our own work as healers, to be inclusive and to try to work toward including even difficult people into our circles so that they don't fall into depression. Serious or chronic illness, sometimes depression coexists with major illness, or it may be triggered by another medical condition. A chronic illness that lasts a very long time and cannot be cured completely, like diabetes, or heart disease, arthritis, kidney disease, HIV and AIDS, lupus, etc. So when people have very long chronic illnesses, sometimes it can be the basis for depression because life is difficult, more difficult than the usual. Oftentimes, like with diabetes, there's a certain diet that must be followed, many restrictions. It's a difficult path and can cause depression. The last one, substance abuse, says 30% of substance abusers have major depression. One of my specialties as a psychologist is that I work with many, many chemically dependent people, alcoholic, drug dependent. And what I see is that exactly what it says there, a large percentage have depression and or anxiety. So it's important, you know, to help people understand. Sometimes they're thinking, well, I feel worse if I don't use alcohol. If I don't drink, I feel worse. If I don't use drugs, I feel worse. And I say, that's true for a short time. But ultimately, the thing you are doing is causing your problem. So I want to talk a little bit more and kind of review a bit here. Four more factors that contribute to depression. Environmental factors, such as major life changes and major losses. I already talked about that. But we also have to include environmental toxins that may be contributing factors. I really want to talk about this from my own personal experience because I have to say I didn't quite understand what it meant until 2 years ago. I got very sick in India 3 years ago. I got pneumonia. I went home. It took a while to get well, but I got well. But never really, really well. A year later, I got pneumonia again. This is very odd. Why am I getting pneumonia again? I take good care of myself. I eat well. I exercise, maybe not as much as I should, but really, I have a strong constitution. I should not be sick. And finally, my doctor could not figure it out. I took many medicines, many. And finally, every single day, I was crying, crying, crying. I could not stop. Now, I have a great life. I have a wonderful husband. Some of you met him last year. I have wonderful sons and grandchildren. I have a career that I love, many friends. Why am I crying? I can't tell you. The doctor says to me, "What's wrong?" I don't know. I just feel terrible. So I went to a special doctor, a functional medicine doctor in Arizona. Now, I had to fly to get there, but he had been recommended. And he said to me some interesting things that I want you to remember. He said, "Where does your water come from?" I said, "Oh, the Russian River. The Russian River is our water supply in the town that I live in Northern California." He said, "Is there any agriculture around there?" I'm in the middle of the wine-growing region. There is agriculture everywhere, vineyards, apple orchards. He said, "So they're probably spraying them with pesticide, yes?" "Sure." "They're probably fertilizing them, yes?" "Sure." He said, "Well, you're drinking all of that, and you're drinking water." And he said, "Do you live anywhere near the San Francisco Bay?" I said, "Oh, yes. My office looks right out on the San Francisco Bay." And he said, "You know, the San Francisco Bay is full of mercury. So I'm going to test you." And he did many, 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 many tests. That was just the beginning, by the way, of the questions he asked me about environmental toxins. What came back from my testing was high levels of heavy metals. Mercury, lead, cadmium, bismuth, others. And he said, "You have heavy metal poisoning. And do you go to Los Angeles?" "Well, I have an office that's 40 miles from Los Angeles." He says, "The most polluted city in the United States. You are getting so much environmental toxin." And that is why you're crying all the time. You have depression, but you have the kind of depression that no amount of psychotherapy, no amount of medication is going to help. You have to clean up. So for the last year and a half, I've been taking a kind of medication that removes the mercury and the other heavy metals from my body. And I feel great. I feel great. I'm not crying anymore. So I think it's very important when we're thinking about environmental factors. It's hard to control. Our whole earth is very polluted. And we have to breathe the air. We have to drink the water. But I drink filtered water now. I'm very careful so that I'm not drinking my Russian river water that has pesticide and fertilizers in it, chemicals. Chemistry. Clinical depression is often said to be caused by a chemical imbalance in the brain, and this is what most drug treatments are based on. Certainly, in most cases, there is a reduction in the amount of neurotransmitters found in depressed people. So it is true that medication will oftentimes help depression, but it can also, because it can be caused by a chemical imbalance. So you need to have a good doctor who can figure out the imbalances and see what is needed to make the correction. Genetics, I talked about this a little bit earlier, but researchers have noticed differences in the brains of people who have clinical depression as compared to those who do not. I think this is so interesting. But now we can actually look at the brains of depressed people and say, how are these people who suffer different from regular folks? And it turns out that one area of difference is the hippocampus, which is a small part of the brain that is vital for the storage of memories, appears to be smaller in some people with a history of depression than in those who have never been depressed. I want to add something here that's not about genetics, but leads to depression, and that is concussion, head trauma. So one of my colleagues, Dr. David Douglas, is a neuroradiologist. And he did a study of the Stanford University football team. And he tested the Stanford football team before the football season and after. And he used the volleyball team as his control group. It's a very different sport, volleyball and football, as you know. And at the end of his experiment, every single member of the Stanford football team had shrinkage of the hippocampus. And I said, well, Dr. Douglas, are those players going to stop playing football? And he said, no, they're going to keep on. And they're going to have serious effects from the head trauma, and they are probably going to have depression at some time in their life as a result. Okay, so it also, to go on about the genetics, a smaller hippocampus has fewer serotonin receptors. And serotonin is one of many brain chemicals known as neurotransmitters that allow communication across circuits that connect different brain regions involved in processing emotions. Now that's important because processing emotions, of course, is part of our mental health. And if your brain is not doing that very well, it can lead to depression. Scientists do not know why the hippocampus may be smaller in some people with depression. And some researchers have found that the stress hormone cortisol is produced in excess in depressed people. Now, this is very important. Cortisol is a stress hormone. And we're beginning to understand that children who have had many traumatic events during their childhood have a problem with the hippocampus. The cortisol has shrunk the hippocampus. So it's very important that we take care of our children, all of them, and try to make sure that there are a minimum of adverse experiences for them. Otherwise, they're going to have depression. So these investigators believe that cortisol has a toxic or shrinking effect on the development of the hippocampus. And some experts theorize that depressed people are simply born with a smaller hippocampus and inclined to suffer depression. Of course, that's possible. You know, it's possible that people are just born with a different makeup. Psychology. Certain ways of thinking can create or sustain depression. You know, I don't know how it is here, but in the United States, there's a whole section of psychology that uses cognitive behavioral therapy to treat depression. So I find that some people have very negative thinking. They just have very negative thinking, and it causes them to be depressed. So they, we would say they always see the glass half empty instead of half full. And so cognitive behavioral therapy is a way of changing the way people think so that they are not constantly immersed in negative thought. This is very important to look at. How is a person thinking? Are they generally positive? And if they are not, how can we help them to be more positive in the way they think about themselves and their life? So that is the end of my presentation about the causes of depression. And how am I doing for time? Can anybody tell me where I am in time? 30 minutes exactly. So sometimes when we've had a talk about depression, the energy goes down because it's kind of a depressing thing to think about, depression. And so I thought, well, maybe before we have questions and answers, we'll sing a song. I'll teach you a song. How many people are willing to learn a song? Raise your hand. Come on, are you willing to learn a song? Good, thank you. So first I will tell you, this is a song that is really about hopefulness despite depression. And it comes from a time in the United States when we had institutional slavery. Okay? There is still human trafficking today. There is still slavery throughout the world. But in the United States, it was legal to own other people and to use them as slaves. And of course, what do slaves want to do? They want to get away. And so the slavery was only in the southern part of the United States. And if a slave could make it to the north, if they could escape and make it to the north, they could be free. But in order to escape, of course, the owners don't want them to escape. And they would send dogs and trackers to find the slaves, bring them back, and punish them terribly. So this is a song written by Charles Tindley that has to do with the Underground Railroad. And I'm going to sing it for you so that you get a demo, and then I'm going to have you sing it with me. And I'm going to read it first, and then I'll sing it for you. I'm sorry, I've had laryngitis, so my singing voice is not great. Courage, my soul, and let me carry on. When the night is dark and I am far from home, praise be to God, the morning light appears. The storm is passing over. The storm is passing over. The storm is passing over. Hallelujah. So, it's a song about overcoming the darkness of depression and fear and escaping to a place of hope and freedom. So, are you ready?